And then they showed the commentary of the rehearsals just to show a little what it was like. But
what did you just say? They will show commentary?
No, they showed the commentary of some of the rehearsals because they were talking about how everything was recorded.
Yeah.
And so
they showed some
of it. They showed that.
Was that, how many hours was that before the concert? 2 hours before?
No, 1 hour before. They had the talk, then there's this documentary. I think it's like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, they only talked for 15 minutes, 17 minutes.
And then
there
was
commentary.
There was an intermission, and then there was the concert. But
right.
Because they're so professional, they had to, you know, they do scales and they get dressed and all these things. They need also time to prepare.
Yeah, I was going
to
just
to
say you, but
the
everybody
instruments.
What about the instruments?
Yeah, they had to tune their instruments and do some scales, get dressed, all these.
Yeah. So, every one of you people here, especially Roxy, you'll be able to say someday, when I'm still alive, and you're still alive, to say, I used to make compositions. I was in that guy's orchestra. I was in his band. You'll be able to tell your non-grandchildren, because none of you guys don't have any kids. You'll tell other people, anybody will listen. See that guy on TV? The guy who's running the whole world? That's I was in his band.
We were crying. We were angry.
The stories will come out. Bob was very abusive. He made everybody feel bad. He played mind games on everybody. Endless games.
He was muting us.
He played old stupid R&B songs and claimed they were the greatest music ever made by humans. Like, I was so tempted to start the show with this song. I wonder if I can find it quickly.
I sent you the piano piece. I think
we're going to do that.
Yeah. That's nothing, not something you usually find or hear.
Right. I knew we weren't going to play much music if Ian didn't come, so I didn't find any new music. So I was wondering what would be a good song, one song that would drive them up the fucking wall, that would they'd be forced to say they liked. What could I play? Where is that? Where could it? Is that one? This the. Just take a light break here. Then we'll get to your stuff. Yeah. No, it's not it. I don't know. Maybe this is it. But this is what the show would have started off as. I was feeling you guys needed therapy.
I will not have the patience to listen to this music, and now I'm enjoying it. Like, yes, it's fun. Relax, baby.
With that incredible chorus and 1,000 people behind them. Yeah, Roxy will say yes. Bob played the shittiest music I ever heard, but after a while, I started singing it.
The thing is. You know, Ian and Bob and Tappa show us, and also Joyce and McLuhan, that we have to enjoy everything and look into everything,
right.
Explore everything,
right.
and just enjoy it. Just have fun. And it's part of cooking.
I don't know what it is. As Steve says, Bob, we know you have a soft spot for that R&B. What's a soft spot? I got a soft spot? What's that? I have a soft spot. But it's I just find it great. I guess I like the emotion of multitude in it. So that was to illustrate what we aren't taking seriously in the Zappa mode. So we're going to now play boring
so
high
the contrast.
Yeah, the contrast.
No, the
this
very,
is going to be hard to listen to.
Very sharp piece that Zappa said is not possible to play with real humans. He made that
right,
for
right.
the Sinclair, but the humans decided, no, we can do that, and they practiced, and they did it. But then
wow.
we have this Dessing Clavier version. Woo!
Wow, I've never heard that before. That's pretty amazing. And you're saying somebody
yes.
could play that?
Yeah, because usually when you listen to the G-spot tornado,
yeah.
part is very good. But all these things behind that go very fast, up and down. Yeah, he told them, we do this with the Sinclair, you cannot play that. But he trained them, he was challenging them, and they said, no, we're going to play it.
They said they're going to play
it? Yeah, so I think Zappa was telling them, you cannot play this, to make them play it.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
he had done it other way, like play this, maybe they would have said,
right.
no,
so
not possible.
There were two people.
But he said, you cannot do this.
Right, right.
Yes,
but you're saying there were two people doing that.
Yeah. Yes, one I suppose was doing the ta da 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 da, and the other will go with the
right.
It's up and
wow.
down because.
So that was not the Sinclair. That was humans.
No, this is the version we heard is the Sinclair, but
okay, good.
The,
okay.
the concert of the maybe.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
There are
okay,
versions
so,
of the Ensemble Moderne where you have the G-spot tornado with this dancer. And they're
dancer.
Playing it. Yeah, there is a dancer with the G-spot
okay.
tornado.
Well, that's the dance troupe from Montreal, La Scala Steps or something. Is that what you mean? Those people who leap about? You saw videos of the dancers?
No, when they played this music with the Ensemble Moderne, they also had a dancer.
One dancer.
Yeah.
Okay. You mean you saw the dancer? You saw it?
Yes. Yes, I'm going to send you the video.
Okay.
She's also wearing some sexy...
bathrobe.
Underwear.
Yeah. Foundational garment.
Vortex.
Okay.
The maze.
I want to go to the conceptual continuity. Unless, is there anything else? I don't think there's anything else you want to play right now, right? We've done it?
Well, we could go on. There are interviews of Ken Nagano talking about Zappa, Boulez, and other
okay,
composers.
Okay, we'll see. Maybe do that later. I want to do a bit of the conceptual continuity. So,
maybe you could play just a fragment of the version they did of the G-spot tornado, just to compare
okay,
it with the machine.
Right.
This is
so
the
this
human.
Is what they did. Yeah, on the
yeah.
on the pianos. On pianos?
Just with the ensemble. They have
okay.
also the pianos.
Well, do they have an orchestra? You mean horns and strings?
Yeah,
the
they have an arrangement, yeah.
Okay.
So
there's also the
lung cancer.
Welcome to America. The rehearsals
right.
that are also interesting.
And do they point out that Welcome to America resonates with the Trump era? Do they, in that interview we just listened to, did they point that out?
No, but I think it's implicit.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's why they picked it to play. Okay, so here goes.
Previously treated with platinum baby.
Zappa, he can't even congratulate. The dancers are la-la human steps. They fling themselves around, you know, very violently. So then he asks them to come out to take a bow. And he looks at them, and they look at him, and then he puts on a mock serious military chin expression. You know, he just goes, "Well done, boys," kind of look, but it's put on. He can't even say fucking, nice going without being self-conscious about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a critic once said that Zappa was the most self-conscious entertainer around. Very self-conscious. So a fine line between nervously self-conscious and self-aware on a constructive level, but he couldn't, he was trying to say, you know, good job, but he couldn't even find, you do it seriously. he's gonna, he walks off the stage, he's gonna go and do another project for an hour or two, then do a third project, then come back here and conduct somebody. This is just one minor thing that he was doing, conducting these guys.
Wow.
So maybe just to finish the, I mean, we can go on and on with the rehearsals and Welcome to America, or maybe also the Putin Post-Industrial America might be interesting.
Well, I don't want to do Welcome. I don't like the Welcome to America. It's just reading through an immigration form. It's boring. I don't like it. I refuse to hear that on my show. I have standards. Well, the punchline, though, for Germans is that they ask you if you have been a Nazi, and if you say yes, you're allowed in immediately.
And he's conducting that with the carnival hat, so it's really...
Yes, yeah, the carnival hat. But the the two dancers fling themselves about. I want to do the conceptual continuity, just to show you what one can do is start noticing all the different connections all over his work. So this is a rare book that puts highlights all this stuff. But is there something else?
Well, maybe just play the Nagano to the...
The what?
The Kent Nagano. He was a conductor.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
How the serious musicians saw what was going on with Zappa at the end, that he was really being recognized as a composer.
All right, good. Is this a recent interview with Nagano?
No.
Okay. All right. I just move these forward a second. But we've created some valuable commentary with you translating what I'm assuming has not been said anywhere else. It gives a whole new aspect of Frank's productivity, which is pretty valuable. So I'm glad you found these videos or looked into it.
Yeah.
Listen to this.
Well, I found the whole thing very ironic, really. Just
yes.
Erase the boundaries between
is this
what
ionic?
Is crossover, casual, whatever.
Right. Is this ionic? This is the way it is if you've got something to say today. You have to somehow get attention within the noise. Very hard to do. But that's, I say incredible things in that rant. I mean, it's unbelievable the facts I spew out, which I had in my head. I never prepared. I just started talking. I just started saying it. And one idea would come after another. But the Nugan Hand Bank, that blew me away when I sent her that article that we found in Portugal. It wasn't getting any American coverage, and all these characters linked back to Lee Harvey Oswald and everybody all got killed. And that's exactly the time when the Rockefeller guys were getting killed by the Bolsheviks. So these were Rockefeller bankers and agents who were being killed through the summer of 1980.
Wow.
Then it goes on from there. Yeah, it's pretty... if you get a chance, listen to it. might have to rewind it a lot to get it, but so my lawyer was in the audience. His lawyer, I think Neufeld, was there. A few early members of Club 22 were witnessing this. Okay, so we're going to play Kent Nagano, which I assume you just sent me. This is November 20-something, 1985.
Wow.
Second term of Reagan. Reagan's second term. It's right after Reagan goes to Bitburg. Now, the May Brussels thing I posted yesterday is all about Fritz Kramer, which is a really amazing story. That the man who guided the American Pentagon war plans for 40 years was a war criminal at Nuremberg. And was released and teamed up with me and Carolyn and Kissinger and was smuggled through the Project Paperclip, and he took over immediately. It may highlight some important facts. Here he is, a German guy. All of a sudden, he's in Louisiana in 1939, and he's immediately put in intelligence. And then he picks little Henry Kissinger, who just arrived from Germany a year before, and puts him in intelligence. And then they go to the most important battle in the world, the Battle of the Bulge, where the Nazis agree to resign, stop the war, and come to the States. And they were convinced because Fritz Kramer walked into this little town. They captured Fritz Kramer. He walked in town. He started lecturing them, and he apparently convinced them that they should give up the town to him and stop the war and take what the effects are. Now, how can a person do that? I don't know. Nobody. Walk in and do that.
Why?
It's all a setup.
Why?
Yeah, what?
I
and where?
Why?
It's the original lie. The first lie. You know, they talk about lying today. This was the first lie.
I love you.
Oh, you want some musical relief? Really,
I
we gotta,
love
that's
you.
Horrible. That's what Kissinger, that's what Kramer felt like when he convinced the townspeople who had captured him to give up to the Americans. I mean, how do you do that? Give him a lecture. Okay, see, listen, he's there with them. He's in jail. They're about ready to torture him. He says, wait a minute, guys, listen to reason. Look, you guys are going to lose within the next 3 months. You don't want to be about to lose again. And say, I can make a deal for you. I can get you out of this mess. He's pleading while he's waiting to be tortured. And he convinces them, supposedly. And then his little sidekick, Henry Kissinger. I know what you mean. I know what you mean. The little sidekick, they put him in Harvard, and then they put him here, and they put him there, and then all of a sudden he's Secretary of State, now Security Advisor, and runs America for the next 50 years. Roy Katoik.
Why?
All right, let's go back to how Bob's doing.
So, back to my rhetoric. So the point is that Nugent Hand were found deficient in certain cover-ups. And though this has something to do with the Battle of the Harvest Moon, we can't get into that yet, because you need a little groundwork on who is what and where that's reporting the newspapers. Dr. Beter will explain what's not reporting the newspapers and never will, because he set up the Export-Import Bank for John Kennedy. That's a fact. That's a fact. Okay, so he's like 80 or something.
I forgot how funny I was. Did you witness that, Carol? Were you there? Carol, she can't remember. She goes, yeah, I'm sure I was there. Yeah, she can't remember it. Yeah, that's a fact. It was so popular that people started playing it on other radio shows on CKLN. And nobody knew who the fuck it was. They all thought it was Bob Marshall. And he wasn't that kind of person, so it didn't make any sense. It was almost like this sober journalist went fucking nuts at a club. They taped it, and then they put on the radio. Bob Marshall like kind of basically ignored it, denied that it was him. But nobody knew about me at that point.
Like machine gun trivia.
Yeah, yeah. machine gun, very important, the most important information of the 20th century to understand top-down control, presented as if it's trivia.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
As if only a nut would be concerned about these issues. Yeah, that's very good. So, Maybe we can play that all. So now Kent Nagano.
Why?
Ah! 12 people found dead next door to the bank. Okay, here we go.
Unknownst to me, Frank was doing some research to find out who could actually conduct his music. He had, at that moment, just had a huge, tremendous commercial success with one of his records, and he wanted to realize a dream of his that he had always had, which was to hear his symphonic scores played by one of the world's great ensembles, so they could actually hear what it sounded like instead of being massacred by an orchestra that wasn't properly rehearsed. So he wanted the best orchestra that he could find, and he wanted a conductor that could actually deal with it. And I had heard of his music because I was visiting Mr. Boulez in the Institute of Recherche, IRCAM, in the Georges Pompidou Center, and I saw on the bulletin board future commissions. And on the list of composers who had been invited to write for Boulez and the IRCAM was Frank Zappa's name, and I couldn't believe it. You know, I mean, this was, for me, a relic of the 1960s. So I asked my friend who worked there, what's the story with this Frank Zappa commission? He explained to me that there was a project that Pierre Boulez was going to conduct a concert of all Frank Zappa pieces and record them. And I thought, God, this is crazy. So I got in touch with Frank Zappa's manager, and I said, I'd like to see some of the scores, but I never really heard anything for a long time until one day I just got a telephone call out of the blue. It was from Frank Zappa inviting me to come to one of his concerts, and he would give me some scores. So I had never in my life been to a rock concert before, having led a very sheltered life as a classical musician. So I went out and bought some earplugs and went to this rock concert. And it was everything that I had feared. It was smoky and sort of light shows all over the place, crowded with thousands of people dressed in very unusual clothing. During the intermission, this enormous bodyguard found me where I was, because I was sitting in the seat. He was so big, he looked like a sumo wrestler, and said, "Follow me." And of course, I didn't argue, I followed him, and he took me downstairs to the dressing room. And there I met Frank Zappa, who was taking his intermission break, and he showed me the scores that he had brought with him. He said, "Take a look at that, what do you think?" And I opened up the scores, and they were really, as I said, so complicated that I was a bit taken aback. I didn't know what to make of them. So I explained to him that I really didn't know what to make out of the scores. I had to take them home and study them a little bit before I could give him an answer. So he said, "Okay." He said, "Take the scores, go home, let me know what you think." So I studied the scores, and I had a great time because they were so complicated and they were challenging to figure out. And I found to my great surprise that in this stack of scores were some pieces that were really great, really exciting, wonderful pieces. That not only were they just complex, but they were well-written compositions. A few weeks went by, and I got a telephone call from Frank Zappa, again unannounced out of the blue, saying, "Well, what do you think? Would you be interested in the scores?" And I said, "Well, yes, I'm really interested. In a couple of scores, I'd like to perform them." And he said, "Well, how'd you like to come with me? I've hired the London Symphony Orchestra. How would you like to come with me to London and record these pieces, do a public concert in London and record them?" And at this point, I was really unknown. I was just basically out of school, and I was working with this orchestra that was having a tough time. This is one of the very few times in my life when I tried to be coy, because I wanted to be cool. So, of course, I wanted to go, and I liked the music a lot. But I said, "Well, gee, I don't know. I have to think about it. And, of course, that was being dishonest. But I said it anyway, and Frank said, well, I'll tell you what. I will give you 15 seconds to think about it. And after 15 seconds, you'll say yes or no. And if you don't say anything, then I'll just go to another conductor. So I said, well, actually, Mr. Zappa, I am interested. And that was the last time that actually I ever tried to be coy, because when you're dealing with people who are really serious, there's really no room to play games. I mean, people who are really concerned about making music just want to make good music. So in a way, he taught me a lesson very early on.
That was really good. I did not know that story. Now, right beside it says, Frank Zappa, the best conductor ever, interview with Jimmy Carl Black. This should be interesting. Don't know if Mark's still here, but this is the one of the best mothers of invention, personality-wise. What's he going to say about Frank?
The common one was this signal, and when he did that, everybody was supposed to go, peep.
Okay, so that's Artie Tripp the third, Artie Dyer Tripp. So it seems to have a bit of him, and then it'll go into Jimmy Earl Black. I'll tell you when it switches. So he's explaining the hand signals, the finger up the butt signal means wrist or something.
High note.
Right, high note, right. Yes. Okay, so this is Artie Tripp, and then I guess it'll go into Jimmy Carl Black.
And when he did that, it was deep. There was one that was supposed to go like booyah, you know, like, and he'd kind of do this, and then when he did something like this, that meant a solo.
He would make a fist like this, and when he went like that.
This is Don Preston.
That means you were supposed to play the lowest group of notes that you could.
Now the next is two fingers, and this requires that you make a very low noise. You can go. Any low noise that you want to make with your mouth on cue for two fingers like this. Are you ready? Everybody at once. The band will watch.
He's saying this to a Mike Douglas TV audience.
Fingers down like this means to play any low note on your instrument just as sort of a bump cutoff, you know, like an exclamation point. Now here is just the opposite of that. The highest possible note on your instrument. Okay, we'll start with a peep.
Okay, this is Jimmy Carl Black talking, and he says, sometimes it would be me playing 5/8. Now, I posted the video, 10 minutes, it's incredible, you know, run through of all these different situations with Zappa doing his ferocious conducting. Pretty good video. So Jimmy Carl Black says,
then I would keep playing the 5/8. He'd do this to Artie. Art would be playing in 7/8. Bunk, 2/3, 1/2/3. Bunk would be playing in 3/4 time. Roy would be playing in 4/4 time, all at the same time.
Keep up the great work. I don't know what to pierce next. P.S. Do you use 1% xylocaine for deep cock head piercings?
That was Jimmy Carl Black.
That's the fact.
No why about it. No why, no what, no where. The fucking fact. And, but look, that's an incredible video. 10 minutes of Zappa ferociously conducting in all these different environments, including his TV audience. So, but a powerhouse that video presents him as. So, did we do that? Is there anything more? We now can do the notes. We get back to reading, simple reading.
Well, there is a video done by the LaRouche sect.
Yeah.
Where they talk about the crisis in economy, science, and art.
Right.
LaRouche is always talking about the importance of music in education.
Right.
for the progress of society. But they think classical education is the only thing that really matters. They don't like low culture. And I don't know, maybe you like to play.
Yeah, I'll play a bit of it because he's right. He's got the right words. It's like, you know, when I lay out a beautiful statement, I answer beautiful words, beautiful statement, Bob, but you couldn't be more wrong. You know, he says the correct principle, but he doesn't know that Zappa fulfills it, what has to be done. He doesn't get the shift.
Yes, and another very, very ironic thing about Zappa is, like he said, I knew all my parts very well, and he will give my part to somebody else. And
yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
You knew everything, and he will change things. And it's like I am, you know, it's like you think you know everything I am saying, and then he says that no longer applies.
Right.
This is just for a moment. This is just like this now, but now something he changes whatever. So that's very ironic too.
Right. It's almost
nothing
like
forever.
You know, Ian said he gets the medicine from Carolyn's brain. So all the Zappa, all the Beater, all the May Brussels, all the LaRouche, all the McLuhan, all this, my brain, and he makes a new pie out of it. But there's echoes of everybody that he's, of the Holy Offices that he's citing, that he's influenced by, is a theory. If you knew my stuff, you would think, and you didn't believe Ian was anything special, just some kind of weird ESP, then you would think that's what, this is just Bob's brain developed into an incredible, all his Holy Offices on the chart mixed up and made into some coherent statement. That's the way it seems to be to me sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so you can say Zappa's ionic, LaRouche is ionic, McLuhan is a bit of ionic. They all got a bit of it. And when LaRouche says that music is very important to science, culture, economy, everything, that's a pretty integrated view. And that's happening, from McLuhan's point of view, technologically. Zappa sees it happening as a science fiction puppetry. Let's play. Send me the LaRouche thing. We'll play a little bit.
I already sent it to you.
Oh, okay. Maybe I have to move. Okay. So it's an example of counter the fragmentation that the Gutenberg galaxy created. Here's LaRouche.
Yes,
science art.
Before I forget. In this project of the Yellow Shark, there is a song called The Girl in the Magnesium Dress. What is that? Carolyn.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
It's weird. He has such a title.
Yeah, that's where he's intuiting the Dobbstown, and then it becomes Iondom. Yep, that's the incredible synchronicity of all this. But LaRouche is pretty good for an integrated humanist view. So this is called Science, Art, and the Economic Crisis.